I'll be brave and ask the first question.
Thank you.
Hello, my name's Bridget Sigley from Computerheads. My question's actually for Diana, which is at what point did she know or decide to franchise, you know, in terms of number of outlets or revenue or, you know, how did that part come about?
Okay, well, I was running one very successful little gym, and I guess the idea came to me because I could see that there were chains around in the world, chains of gyms in other parts of the world, and I could see that they would probably come to Australia, and I thought if that was the case, then Fernwood should be one of them, and I thought, we'll be a chain. We'll open another one, and basically one thing led to another, and I investigated franchising as a method for expansion because it was good to have other people's capital because I wasn't able to borrow money, but mainly because of the level of customer service that I was giving in my club, I didn't see how I was going to do by just expanding and employing people around the country being such a widely sparse population. And of course, once you start one, then you need to reach a critical mass to be able to sustain what you do and make good business decisions. So basically then it was a matter of how many can I grow, sustain the growth and grow at a sensible rate and still stay in business long enough to get there to be able to provide the level of support and service I needed for all of the clubs around the country. So it just drove itself, really.
Hi, my name is Kate Turner from Sinclair Nightmare. This question is just for David, actually. You've talked about, I suppose, the increasing complexity of the world, and you've also talked about seeing the world spin. And I'm wondering how much, and also emerging trends like competition, business actually coming together in different networks. And I'm wondering how much of your business is about helping other businesses think about the future. And if so, what sorts of tools do you use to do that?
Yeah, the practice does clearly involve itself in assisting people to think about the issues. I spoke earlier about strategy, generally speaking, and it concerns me that when people approach that issue of strategy, they quickly go into a state of mind of having to see the structure very clearly. And it's very mechanistic. I tend to approach it with clients organically in terms of thinking about possibilities. It's not about, at least our experience in working on a number of client accounts, it's not so much about creating a view and forcing it into an application. It's considering the possibilities broadly. And we tend to explore a lot up front. And that exploration, I say up front with colleagues and clients, some of that time would be wasted. However, it leads you to fertile discussion and gives you some insights that you otherwise wouldn't have had. So that's one of the guiding principles that we adopt. We really consider possibilities from different frames of reference. And if we think about the things we're doing with Negotiation Challenge, where we're getting some really smart academics who come from a range of areas. They come from engineering, from law, from commerce, from arts, from IS, from a whole range of areas. And you put those people together with some really ambitious entrepreneurs, and we're working with clients who have very ambitious goals, they start to consider possibilities differently. We're mining knowledge that exists in academia and isn't being applied. And we're also working with people who have a thirst for understanding where the next wave is and giving them the opportunity to explore that. And what comes out of it is something that we can't predict ex ante. We can't predict that beforehand. But what we can say is it will lead to some very interesting opportunities. And then the pathways emerge, and then the game plans emerge, and then you execute. And so all parties come out holding hands saying, great result. I've learnt a lot on how to apply my thinking. That's what challenge is about. And entrepreneurs and senior managers are saying, we're coming up with ideas that we otherwise wouldn't have. We're introducing a new fold to this, and it's a very recent one, and that is that we're taking some very seasoned people who have been around for a long time, and they adopt a different approach as well. So whilst the academics are thinking about the stuff that they're learning about and the entrepreneurs are out there wanting to blast forward, the seasoned professionals who I'm working with are going to have an impact in terms of what's the practicality here? And I'll put another layer onto it. So it's that exploration. The world is spinning differently, but you'll see it if you're able to adopt different frames of reference. And that's essentially what the practice does and delivers a result. We're clear on that. We have got to deliver a result. Does that help? Yeah.
Thank you. We have another question.
My name is Tim Morris. I'm with South East Water. And my question is based largely on the profile of the audience, so maybe a show of hands, everyone that does actually work for an organisation. Is there a fair few? Yeah. Or as in working for someone else as opposed to yourself. Yeah. And that leads to my question. I'd like to ask the panel what they think about entrepreneurs within organisations. Is there room? Can the two coexist?
I'll go first. Yes, I think they definitely can. I think an entrepreneur enjoys having other entrepreneurs within the organisation because they're like-minded and they work at the same pace. But at the same time, you've got to have a lot of people around you who are not entrepreneurial and who are the kind of person I am is very visionary, very much wanting to go ahead and challenging, overcoming challenges and challenging status quo and wanting to make change all the time. So I need people around me in my organisation who will be a little bit more structured and keep me tethered a bit.
You can't have an organisation full of entrepreneurs.
No, you can't. But it is nice to have some around because, you can shoot the breeze with them and share your ideas and they can capture your vision easier as well and they come along with you. So a bit of both, I think.
Michael? I think that, I guess based on the characteristics that most entrepreneurs have, I think like an organised corporate structure doesn't really sit in with them. They like to be out there, they like to be risk takers, and I think that when they're working within this corporate structure, they're sort of restricted a little bit. I know that there are a lot of entrepreneurs out there that have came from a corporate background, but I do think that they're in these corporate roles, they're getting experience, but I think they come to a point in their life when they basically find themselves and they realise what they want to do and they want to be out there, they want to do it their own way, they don't want anyone to say, hold back. And I think that it's because of this that they sort of leave corporate role just so they can not be restricted and go out as they feel free.
David?
Your question's about the intrapreneur.
Yep.
The entrepreneur within the organisation.
Yep.
I think that there's some of the best experiences I've had is working within an organisation, working for somebody else. Just because, we work within our own organisations, that's the only way that we see a path, it isn't quite right. Some of the best experiences have been working within another organisation and being exposed to other ways of working. Having said that, there are some people who just don't fit. You're just not going to fit. You don't get along. You've got this passion inside you and you've got to express it. And there's a limit to what you can do within an organisation. Once you appreciate that and explore it in more detail, provided that you can see the opportunity and how to realise it, that's your signal to give it a go, in my view. Because you don't like working for somebody else, it's not a licence to play. Now, too many people say, I founded this because I didn't want to work for them. And that's not good enough. You've got to be saying, it's because I had greater vision. I had a goal. I wanted to pursue this. I wanted to achieve a great outcome that I couldn't achieve within the organisation I'm with. And one of the things that I'm very passionate about and committed to within our practice, all our associates, I make the point that when they join the practice, there is a period of time that they will spend, and they will learn so many things and have certain ambitions and certain goals. I deliberately want them to leave the practice and go and explore it and go and pursue it. We're actually creating entrepreneurs within the practice. One of the catches here is, though, that I'm encouraging them to enter into a venture with me so that I own a proportion of their new business. However, it's a kind of nice way because we smile about it in terms of what is the next step beyond the practice. And it's not in management consulting. It's in whatever area that they see an opportunity, and it's an area that they are well suited to pursue, whether it's hairdressing or automotive or aeronautical engineering. It matters not. As long as the business case stacks up, here's the opportunity, I want to approach it. I'm not sure that many organisations take that enlightened approach. And it's a shame. We should see more of that, I think.
It's an interesting idea, though, isn't it, that of the intrapreneur?
Yeah.
I mean, you're a Brodie boy, as you said. Do I all of a sudden find myself working for one of them? Is Eddie Maguire an intrapreneur? He's within the organisation. He's created the footy show. He's become the CEO.
That's a special case because I think that...
I just never miss a chance to rap the boss in public.
Eddie Maguire is not Channel 9. Channel 9 is not Eddie Maguire. Eddie Maguire is a multiple of things. One of the roles he's playing is within Channel 9. But he's doing other stuff. You know, he's your classic intrapreneur-entrepreneur hybrid. He's a blend. He's doing lots of things. But it's consistent with what's being said here, and that is that see an opportunity, be passionate about it, and pursue it. It isn't a strike against your name if you're within another organisation. That's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic to be surrounded by people within an organisation approaching those things.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Hi, Dale Brooks from State Trustees. I've heard, I suppose, a lot of what you've been saying in agreement. I suppose what I might try and do is ask to see if there's some different opinions out there. I think somebody once said that you have one truly great idea in your lifetime. And I suppose as an entrepreneur, it's probably that you look at things differently or that you can see that opportunity and then you actually go for it. I suppose, Diana, if I have a look at your experience, you've thought of the female gym, and I suppose I'm wondering whether that's your one great idea or whether you actually think you've had many ideas that you keep revolving, such as the gym that then went to franchising and now you're going international, or is that your one idea? I suppose, and I'll put it open to all of you.
Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, everyone says, oh, what a great idea, you started a women's gym, and it's been a huge success and, you know, well done and congratulations. But I don't know that it was the women's gym that was a great idea as much as the passion and the drive behind it and making it bigger and better. I think there's a lot of great entrepreneurs out there who've created something that is nothing unusual. There's a lot of them around and they're very successful. So, and I think if I wasn't successful at this, I would have some other idea. I would pursue something else because now I'm passionate about business and I would not want to be doing that. So if something happened and Fernwood was sold or wasn't there anymore, I'd be off looking for something else, for another idea. I'm an ideas person, and which is a real problem for all of the people who work for me because, you know, I won't leave it alone and they don't get a chance to implement something and I'm coming back with another idea. So, you know, they've got to put a brick on my head and tell me to stop it. So, yeah, I think an entrepreneur is an ideas person. They just keep coming up with ideas and,
guys?
My opinion.
Yeah, look, in our case, we both enjoy motorcycles and I guess, like as I was saying before, it's very important to sort of enjoy and, I guess, be interested in the business that you're involved in. But I don't want to be restricted to that. Like, obviously, I'm still young. I'm 22. There's growth for Mojo.
A little bit of time ahead of me.
There's definitely growth for Mojo. Like, as I mentioned at the start of the night, we're going international and we're speaking to distributors worldwide. But I sort of guess that it comes back to the fact that entrepreneurs are thriving on this challenge. And as an entrepreneur, you're looking for new ideas every single day. You're an ideas person. But I think that it does come back to the fact you're thriving on this challenge and you build your business and you basically, you start with nothing and you build it to something which is like of value. And when you do this, you take something from basically here to up there, it's, well, where's the challenge? And that's when entrepreneurs are out there. They're looking, I guess, either for new markets in Diana's case, or if you're sort of restricted with your growth, then you're looking for a new business venture.
A new idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. There isn't just one idea. The most exciting thing that's happening now is not that we're moving from one idea to multiple ideas. We're moving from, you know, the minds of the idea generators coming together and creating ideas that otherwise wouldn't have existed. We're seeing things emerge in markets that are a direct result of people coming together to pursue their ideas and bring them together. Yeah, so I agree wholeheartedly. There isn't just the one idea that makes somebody great. It's a series of them.
We are short on time. We'll take one last question.
Thanks. Nick Fleming, SKM, Sinclair Knight Mertz. Probably directed mainly to David, but appreciate comments from the rest of the panel. We certainly deal with a range of private and public sector clients who are looking for new pathways to navigate through sort of complexity of the world in which we're now operating. I'm interested in your thoughts on the capacity, or perhaps the primary challenge with it being public and private enterprise, to deal with that complexity, and whether you'd care to speculate on what might our Australian business environment look like in 5 or 10 years, and perhaps how many private, potentially even large private companies might not exist in that space of time, and also perhaps in the public sector. Is government going to have the capacity to deal with this sort of complexity?
You've left out world peace.
We've dealt with that.
So, we're all working on that a little every day, aren't we? It's all right.
If I understand the question, do we have the basic infrastructure to allow us to play the game as it changes? Between,
I was really seeking a sense of your experience of the capacity within private and public enterprise to conceive and deal with complexity. And is there a key challenge there that you experience in terms of getting beyond that, you know, very structured linear way of wanting to actually deal with issues?
Okay. I think the question ties in really well with the one beforehand in terms of the intrapreneurship issue. I think that whilst our institutions, our public institutions, are making genuine attempts to deal with this issue of rates of change and responses to global dynamics, the answer lies... Not purely, but it has a lot to do with the ways in which we can embed different thinkers and different approaches within our institutions to challenge the status quo. I think many of us could relate to this, where we are representing the interests of a fast-moving enterprise and we approach a conforming enterprise and find that we struggle. We struggle to make sense of it. We struggle because we're not able to get the outcome we want. And the converse is true. We are a very well-structured institution, and we don't want to be dealing with these issues that we feel are irrelevant. In my view, over time, we need to make a commitment to embedding a different approach within both institutions so that the ones that we're calling small, agile, entrepreneurial have a greater respect for those public institutions and what it takes to succeed. And the reverse is true. If we embed those really good thinkers within those organisations, those intrapreneurs, and give them the respect that they deserve and give them the career paths that they deserve and acknowledge their contribution to the organisation, even though they're bucking the trend, that's when it starts to make sense. And organisations will then start to partner better. I'm not sure that we will ever succeed, but I don't think it's an absolute game, it's a relative game, because everyone else around the world is struggling with this issue. And I think it comes back to the view we were putting forward before, and that is that success will have a lot to do with the ways that organisations collaborate in an entrepreneurial way to generate a new vision of the future. again, it's only just starting, but I really do think, my prediction is that over the next 3 to 5 years, we will see some significant different kinds of organisations responding to shifts. And you'll get the ducks in a row. You know, here is where the markets are emerging. Here is the strategy that makes sense. Here is the structure of the business that we haven't seen before. And here are all the resources we need to make it work. I think that has a lot to do with it.